I was reading to my kids the other night. We have a rule that if they get their teeth brushed and their pajamas on by 7:30, I'll read a book. Those are the rules.
Comedian Louis C.K. often jokes about the daily challenges and joys of being a parent. He has two daughters. In this stand-up routine, Louis C.K. is describing a scene that parents who read classic pieces of literature to their children have probably encountered.
We were reading Tom Sawyer. I'm reading them Tom Sawyer because Mark Twain, great author, and they're 5 and 9 years old. They're young for it, but they catch up to it, and they're fascinated by all the language. He uses big words and beautiful writer.
C.K. says he likes to read about Tom Sawyer more than about Twain's other popular character, Huckleberry Finn, because of Finn's insistent use of the N-word, sometimes 40 times a page, he says, when referencing African Americans.
I can't sit on my daughter's bed and just say all night and then put her to sleep. I just ain't gonna do that. I told the girls, you know, these boys are racists. These boys are racists and they're not nice boys. I think we can still enjoy the stories about the fishing and the trading and...
But can we? I'm Brian Ellison. Today on KCUR Central Standard, we're asking that question. When issues of race appear in children's literature, what should we do about it? What do we do as parents, teachers, or as a community about all these racist epithets and tropes and depictions in books that maybe, as kids, we loved? And maybe even more to the point, how are representations of people of color changing in literature? And where do you go to find, literally, a different picture? Elena McVicker is with us. She's the Youth Services Librarian at the Kansas City Public Library, and you can often find her hanging around the Bluford branch. Hi, Elena.
Hi.
Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
It feels like I hear conversations about this topic from time to time, but then I'm always caught off guard by hearing about another book that I'd completely forgotten, or never consciously admitted, at least, had these racist elements to it. That must happen to people at the library all the time.
It does. Even with me personally, I was doing some nostalgic reading the other day, and I was reading Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, mm-hmm. and man, the Oompa Loompas sort of are a little problematic if you think about it, but...
How so? Why are they... Because I think a lot of us think of the Oompa Loompas from the movie as orange people with green hair. They don't seem very realistic about anything.
Right. Well, in the book, they come from a region, I believe, in Africa, and... the language that he uses to describe them are not very politically correct.
So even a children's librarian still runs across books that surprise her. You've been doing this for a while, I guess, reading for even longer than that. Can you think of a time from your own childhood where this really stood out to you?
Mostly when I read Huck Finn. Honestly, we read it in school, and we did have a discussion beforehand about the use of the N-word in the book and the depictions of Huck and Jim, and the teacher thought it was really important for us to read, and I remember just being incredibly uncomfortable the entire time I read it.
Yeah. Why were you uncomfortable, even with that preamble from the teacher?
Right. Although, we knew when it was written historically and at that time, that word was much more prevalent than it is today. With our current knowledge, it's still uncomfortable to read. I mean, even though, the teacher was trying to explain the historical content or context, with my knowledge of the word, it was just really hard to read.
I'm curious about your experience of this as a librarian. How do people react when they realize that a book they love is actually problematic or racist?
I think people struggle with it because it's very nostalgic when you have books that you loved as a child that you remember as an adult. Like, that has made it through, years of reading and years of school, and I think it's just heavily nostalgic. So when you read that, it's sort of like finding a beloved character is, really an awful person at heart. And it's hard to sort of grapple with that.
It's like you're losing a family member.
Right.
And something you didn't know about them.
Right. And then you're like, well, is it okay to still love this? And I think absolutely it's okay to still love it as long as you understand why in today's context that book or that passage or that character may be a little problematic.
And so you're talking about the parent in that case, or an adult mm-hmm. reader who can understand that. But what about a kid who maybe doesn't have that higher level thinking to really understand why it's problematic?
Well, I think if the kid is being told it's problematic, I think that could be a great place to open a discussion of why. I know race is a tricky subject for parents to talk about with their kids. Or many people feel uncomfortable discussing with their kids. And I think using these as kind of a gateway into talking about that is a perfect opportunity to explain why maybe this was written then and they were allowed to publish it then, and why now it would not be okay.
You know, there's so many great children's books out there. We'll even talk about some of those later in the mm-hmm. hour. I guess I'm curious why you wouldn't just say, you know, we can put aside some of these books that have problems. Why, there's certainly lots of people who have called for certain books to be banned or taken out of libraries or not read in schools. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you do that when there's so many other great books?
That's a really good question and something I sort of struggle with. On one hand, as a librarian, I adhere to the ALA code of conduct, and that includes we believe in free and open access to everything for everybody. Also, in the historical context, I think it's really important to see where we came from and to see how far we've come, even though we still have a long ways to go. Hmm. Just banning a book outright is, you get into some sticky subjects. And we've had a couple books recently that were actually, one book in particular that was recalled over depictions of race in it.
Well, let's talk about that book. We also want to talk about some of these classic works of literature, mm-hmm. like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate
right.
Factory. But that's a good reminder that this isn't just an issue with books from the past. What was that book?
The book's called A Birthday Cake for George Washington, and it's by Ramin, I'm going to really mispronounce his name, Gorishram, and Vanessa Brantley Newton. And it's about George Washington's cook named Hercules. And it was published the beginning of January. And by the middle of January, it had been pulled from the shelves.
George Washington's cook, Hercules, is a slave, it turns out.
Right.
It doesn't seem like the kind of book that would raise a lot of controversy. It's about George Washington getting a birthday cake.
Right. And it was less about the text and more about the illustrations, because it depicted Hercules as a very happy slave. And, you know, when we're trying to teach kids about slavery and about those issues and how it's, you know, reverberated throughout our nation still to this day, you know, is it true to historical context to have them happy all the time in every single panel of that book?
How exactly does a publisher recall a book? What happened here? I mean, once the book's out there, it's out there, isn't it?
Right. Well, there's a lot of outcry nationally about it, a lot. And I think it got to be so much and so bad that they just stopped publication on it.
Wow.
Completely. And then after that, there was a lot of outcry about, well, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of information, you know, was that the right thing to do to pull it? Or was it sort of a form of self-censorship?
Which some people would say is more dangerous.
Right.
Well, I guess it is further complicating that particular case, the author and the illustrator are both people of color, right?
I believe so, yes.
So how does that make a difference that these perspectives are being represented in the publication of a book like that?
I mean, it does. Some would argue it would, some would argue it wouldn't. It's a sticky situation and a sticky subject. Both of them released statements on it.
Defending the book?
I don't necessarily defending, but mostly just dismayed that their intentions were misconstrued in a way that they didn't feel was fair, I think.
So it's a complicated question we're talking about today on Central Standard, the depiction of race in children's literature. I do want to jump back to your knowledge of children's literature through the ages and through the shelves of the library where you work. Can you give us a couple other examples of books that a lot of people still read, but that actually have what you might think of as unfortunate depictions of race?
Right. The Secret Garden is one.
Secret Garden. Remind us of the story of The Secret Garden.
The story of The Secret Garden is about a girl named Mary Lennox, and she becomes an orphan and goes to live with her family in England, and has a cousin who is sort of a recluse, and they find a garden that has been boarded up for years for reasons that they don't know right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds innocent enough.
It does. Sounds lovely. And I think lots and lots of kids have read it for a long time.
Right. But at one point she says, blacks are not people. And so how, you know, when
and
you
is
read that,
that is
line,
is it corrected? Is it argued with in the book?
No. Although a lot of her other behavior is really, you know, she's not a very nice girl. And a lot of her other unnice qualities are really hammered out. And by the end of the book, she is very... the picture perfect girl, but this point for whatever reason is just left unchecked.
I've heard similar questions raised about depictions in books like Little House on the Little House series,
right?
Laura Ingalls Wilder, mm-hmm. America classic. I not only do I remember reading that as a kid, I remember when I was an older kid reading it to younger groups of kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was that much a part of my school's life, but it's problematic too, right?
It is. She doesn't have very accurate depictions of Native Americans. She calls them several derogatory terms. I think she uses the word darkie at one point.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, I was reading some articles about this as well, and it's, I mean, that's how people referred to them then.
So this
but
is so
is that
this
okay?
is yeah that's the complicated question, right? If is it a is the problem that these images, these words are used in the book, or is the problem that they that the book is accurately depicting a less a more racist time?
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's, I mean, that's a really tricky, sticky question, is, you know, what can we do about that? We can't. You know, the Little House books are an institution. They're really popular. We can't just take those off the shelf. And then going back and censoring that out or correcting that, would that be true to the author's original intent? I don't know. It's a tough question. And again, I think it's just mostly important to continue to educate children and to talk about race and to make sure they understand why it's not. Why that's not an okay term now? Why and what has caused us to come to this conclusion?
We're going to talk more in this hour about parental techniques, what parents can and mm-hmm. should do. I guess I'm curious at the front end of that process, when the parent, maybe with their kid, first comes to you as a librarian and asks for help finding a book, what are they typically looking for? How are they, on what basis are they choosing a book in the first place?
It sort of depends. Some of them do like the classics, and you can kind of tell right away when you offer different books, and they're like, what about the Little House books? And you're like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them do like the classics that they knew as kids because they're comfortable with that, and they know how to already kind of what's coming, what the content is in the book. They're comfortable with that kid reading that. Others want books that, like sports books. Are the kids really into sports right now?
Mm-hmm.
I work at the L.H. Bluford branch of the Kansas City Public Library, and my population is heavily African American, and a lot of those parents want books that reflect our kids' daily lives in that.
And they specifically come in asking for that?
Yes.
And do you ever, when you're sort of handing over a book or rattling off a list of possibilities, do you say to parents, now you might want to bear in mind that people of color are depicted in this way, or here's a book that you'll want to read, but when you get to chapter 7, watch out for this?
Usually I'm not that specific, but if there is some major event in the book that has caused controversy, maybe on a larger scale, I might mention it, just, hey, a heads up. And it sort of depends. You can tell some parents are a little more free with what their kids are reading in terms of content, and others do want more of a heads up. It's just kind of a feel you get when you're going through like a reader's advisory question with the parents.
Do you remember the books that you were given as a kid?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Did you see yourself in those books?
No, I did not. I am Hispanic. I was raised in a tiny, tiny town, and so I really struggled to find books that I saw myself in. It was more, I saw the spirit of myself, like in Laura Ingalls Wilder and her spunky spirit and her adventure. I saw myself in that. But in terms of racially, I really struggled to find a family with daughters who were mixed race.
And what was the impact of that struggle of not feeling like the children you read about looked or maybe even felt like you.
Right. I think for me, the impact came later, when I was a little older, when there started to become characters in books that looked like me and reflected my life. And it really was emotional a little bit to sort of see my family in a book. After, I think, as a kid, I sort of just dismissed that I ever would, that that's just how books were, that they were always going to be about white kids or, you know, kids whose parents looked the same, were the same color. And I think in my little brain, I'd sort of just always assumed that how it would be. Mm-hmm. And so now when I read books that reflect myself, it's really a great feeling.
That's Elena McVicker. She is a librarian, a youth services librarian at the Bluford branch, the Kansas City Public Library. She's going to stick around, and when we come back from a break, we'll meet a couple of others, local authors who are also people of color, and they're also parents, about how this has played out in their households and in their work. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. Central Standard will be back in a minute on KCUR 89.3. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about the way race is represented in children's literature, past and present. We've heard some pretty troubling examples. We may hear more of those, but we'll also look for some positive depictions and talk about how parents deal with these issues with their own kids. We've got two authors who are also parents, or parents who are also authors, here in the studio. Christine Taylor Butler. She's written a gazillion books for young and older kids. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Tracy Sorrell. She's a writer, and she has a kid's book being published soon herself. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. So, Christine, I want to start with you. I read something you wrote about your childhood, and it helped me to understand why what we're talking about today is so important. How did you end up immersed in this world of books?
Oh, we didn't have a lot of money in my family, but libraries were free. Mm-hmm. So we were at the library every week. In fact, I grew up in Cleveland, and they have the most amazing downtown library. It's blocks long. And I would spend my whole weekend there. And so you could travel to other places, and I got a library card easily and quickly, and my schools encouraged reading, so that was me.
And you would spend hours going to other places through those books.
And my daughters are doing the same thing, so it's in the DNA.
And how did that change you, or what impact did that have to have access to all of those books?
I grew up in the 60s. I guess I'm dating myself.
It's all right.
When, my daughters are surprised to find out the Civil Rights Act was passed after I was born. opportunities for African Americans were limited. You know, get out of high school, get a job. You didn't know anybody who traveled to another country, let alone traveled to another state unless they were visiting a relative. And so books kind of said there's more out there than what you see at the end of your block. Mm. And so we've been modeling that behavior for our children.
Yeah. I mean, can you think of certain ways or even certain books that you read that sent you messages about who you were?
Not about who I was.
Okay.
Okay, because think about it. When we were growing up, there was, I think we were at the tail end of Bobbsey Twins, but there was Nancy Drew, and she wasn't me. And there were the Hardy Boys, and it wasn't me. But we got...
Wasn't you because they were white?
They were white. And they were living a completely different existence that didn't have anything to do with resistance to their own dreams, other than what applies to children in general. But we had, as you were talking about, we had Willy Wonka, and we had Little House on the Prairie was required reading in school, and Little Black Sambo. And so there were no books. There were no dolls. You know, there were no positive things that you could find other than limited things on the media that said, you have a place in this world. So you have to translate. And it surprised me when I got older and I had daughters that they were reading books like Harry Potter and still having to translate. We aren't in the inner circle.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking of there's two different issues there. One is a sin of omission and a mm-hmm. sin of commission, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. Little Black Sambo, it's sort of unbelievable to my current day ears that was ever something that you would be asked to read in your school.
But, we're also asked to read Mark Twain, and it just wasn't questioned. I think what we have, and still an issue, is these are classics that people grew up with so that they feed them to children as the same classics. And there wasn't a new body of work being fed because it's not being acquired. So if publishers aren't putting the books out, then you're forced to look for, at the time, books people were self-publishing. And children's literature was not a thing.
I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation about this. If you're a parent, or maybe if you are a kid even, or you were one not too long ago, we'd love to hear about books that represent race in ways that have stood out to you, either for better or for worse. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also tweet your thoughts. We're at KCURCST. Tracy Sorrell, what was your own experience of children's books when you were a kid yourself?
Like Elena and Christine, libraries were my sacred space. I spent a lot of time in the library, and they brought hope and enlightenment, places of reflection. But I didn't see positive stories about tribal children. I didn't see anything contemporary. Thankfully, I guess I'll date myself. I'm a child of the 70s and 80s, and I did not have to read Little House on the Prairie. And thankfully, my school librarian didn't push that on me. So I'm grateful for that. But, you know, I did read certainly Peter Pan, you know, and the very caricature-like Indian chief that's in there. And I think, you know, unfortunately, we still have some of that stuff today where you'll find people who are not doing their homework. You know, there's less of it. People get called out on social media. But, you know, no one really had a voice back then saying, why are we representing these people as less than human? You know, and I didn't have a way to describe that at the time either. But I just think it goes to a lot of are we going to otherize folks? You know, are we going to continue to do that? When you look at Uncle Remus stories, which I heard as a child, you know, Rabbit is our trickster in, you know, I'm a member of the Cherokee Nation. That's our trickster. And yet it gets morphed into these stories, which are incredibly racist, you know, and that has no context with our culture at all. So it's just interesting that as a child, you're trying to make sense of what you hear and then you think, but Rabbit doesn't act like, you know, it's like,
right. It doesn't
seem like
it's
hard
like
to
me.
Have a language for that when you're younger, yeah. I think.
I mean, when you have a 6-year-old daughter?
Son,
I'm mm-hmm. sorry.
No, that's fine.
You have a 6-year-old son.
Yes.
And I guess, you know, a lot of parents would be taking their 6-year-old son and introducing him to Little House on the Prairie. Little House on the Prairie, mm-hmm. where Ma talks about Native Americans as savages. Mm-hmm. Will your son ever read Little House on the Prairie?
Not unless he wants to. And it's not so much that, you know, I just feel like there's so much good literature out there now that, you know, as, you know, the other guests have said, yes, people see these as classics because that's all they had then, you know. And so there's certainly, I think, some buy-in about, well, it's a classic because that's all we had. Now we have a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. You don't have to read right. those. You can, but you don't have to. And so for my son, you know, he's now at an age where he's starting to select books. So I still, you know, try to keep an eye on what he's reading to help, you know, if there are those things, because even current books. But there's so many wonderful Native authors now and books that we have. And I would love to say there's a ton of them, you know, there's not, but, you know, there's more in the
more
pipeline.
More than there used to be.
Exactly. And so you don't have to have, because the whole pan-Indian idea, you know, and this caricature of, you know, the chief with the headdress, the Indian princess, there's no such thing as, you know, royalty in any Indian tribe. There's no kingdom making. There's none of that, you know.
So the depictions, even though they're commonplace, aren't accurate.
Right, right. And yeah. So everyone's got a separate tribe, separate language, religion, etc. And some of those things are fit for consumption and sharing with other people, and some of them aren't, you know. But there was definitely not that appreciation in previous, you know, generations. That
well, I mean, and to seize on that, you're talking about these unfortunate depictions that mm-hmm. are inaccurate, mm-hmm. and there's certainly, we talked about some of those in the case of African Americans mm-hmm. In a lot of literature, but you mentioned Harry Potter as a contemporary example of that other problem, that sin of omission, where perhaps there's it's not that African Americans are being badly depicted, it's that they're not being depicted at all.
The default is white. And there's a really good article by a British teacher who asked his students to write stories, and the stories were all, it's a mixed race class, and the stories were all about white kids. And he says, why don't you write about your own experiences? And they said, no, because stories are about white children. And so I recently came back from a conference, The State of Black Science Fiction. And there's an amazing property coming on the market called Tuskegee Airs. Now, Tuskegee, it immediately tells you they're African American. Mm-hmm. They're the descendants of the Tuskegee Airmen. The production values are off the chart. And the rumor is that media has reached out about doing that as a commercial property or a movie.
Wow.
If they would change one of the characters to a white kid. So that is the pushback, which is the default, is white.
And what is the argument they would make to change one of the characters to a white kid?
I'm probably talking out of school, but years ago I talked to James Patterson about the Detective Cross series. And they said, well, we only have so many A-list actors who could play Detective Cross. Could you make him a white guy?
Oh, wow.
The default is, and until you had a Shonda Rhimes or you had an Empire come out, the default was people of color don't buy books. People of colors are not a major market. We have to market to who we think our constituent is. And if you look at the decision makers, they're the same as the gatekeepers in publishing. If you have a predominantly white publishing environment, they buy what they know, or they transform what they don't know so that what went into acquisitions may look one way. It's culturally sensitive. What's coming out of acquisitions and the book on the shelf may not be what the author intended because it has gone through kind of a whitewashing process.
Which raises the question of sort of major media companies that own everything or across mm-hmm. various mm-hmm. Various media. Elena McVicker from Kansas City Public Library is still here. And Elena, I know that the Harry Potter books are among the most requested that you deal with. But how do you deal with the, as Christine put it, the whitewashing that's involved there?
It's really hard. I mean, like Christine said, white is the default. And even when I read those books, it didn't even occur to me that all these characters are white until the movie came out. And I think they changed one of the characters or made one of the characters black. And now with the play in London, they chose to make Hermione black as well, which I think is fantastic. But there's a huge pushback against that, like a gigantic pushback. But yet when characters of different races are changed to white, like I know there's a movie coming out and I can't remember the name, but the character is Asian and they cast Scarlett Johansson. But when that happens, there's not as big of an outcry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I've heard J.K. Rowling talk about this. I know she's been asked about why there weren't any gay characters, for example, and she says, well, how do you know there weren't? And is there a sense in which not being specific leaves it open to parents and readers to interpret, or does it need to be more intentional than that, Christine?
I think it does. And you know what? I'll be honest. I'm getting some backlash now because in my current novel, I don't tell you until page 209. The race of the protagonist. I don't tell you because it's not relevant. I have, however, left all the cultural beats. I have left all the nuances. I have an African-American editor who understood exactly what the voice was doing and the little asides. But sometimes you want kids to be able to see themselves in a book without really thinking about, oh, wait, it's a black person, so, or it's a Native American person, or it's a Hispanic person. So sometimes it's relevant and sometimes it's not. And J.K. Rowling is free to write whatever she wants. Our issue is publishers tend to not want to acquire the body of work that will balance that out by showing a broader group of children who in a few decades are going to be the majority.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say they already are. I mean, in mm-hmm. the United States, you know, I can't say worldwide. I mean, some countries, they're definitely the majority. But in the United States, you know, last year they were talking very, you know, frequently in the media about how children 5 and under are, the majority of them are now not white in this nation.
Right.
So that being the reality, we need to have a body of literature that reflects that.
And the exactly. marketing decisions may need to be mm-hmm. different.
Well, and I don't think if we have a body of work that reflects, you know, it's not just good for kids of color. It's good for everyone.
Absolutely.
It's good for everyone to see depictions, not just of different races, but of different disabilities or abilities or just... It's never a bad thing to read about kids who are different than you.
We've invited our listeners to join the conversation at 816-235-2888 with examples of literature, good or bad, that in how it addresses race. But we also welcome your observations and questions. And I want to welcome Bob from Overland Park. Bob, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to tell you about my experience as a volunteer reader with Lead to Read. We go into classrooms in Kansas City and read with children in the first and second grade. And I thought there was kind of a dearth of some cool books to read from, so I went to the Johnson County Library used book department to get some books to just contribute to the classroom. And I couldn't find any that had black children in them. I had to pick some that had animal characters or Asian characters in them because there just weren't any. And that made me think that perhaps we're being directed quite a bit by bookstores, libraries, all that make an assumption about us as white parents wanting only books with white children in them. And I think that publishers need to recognize that we desperately want books sure. with all children in them, mm-hmm. and there are so many children's books that it makes absolutely no difference the color of the face of the child that's participating in the action. It just makes a huge difference to the reader to be able to see them.
I appreciate that, Bob.
Part of their world.
Yeah, we've got a librarian here, Elena McVicker. Bob didn't find the books he was looking for. Are the books out there? Are they just hard to find?
There are books out there. I would say my issue is when you think about books about like black characters, a lot of times they're historical. I mean, I don't need to hand any more of my library patrons or their parents another book about black history. They
right.
know it.
We know who Harriet Tubman was.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I understand why those books are very important to have, but what I want is a Little House on the Prairie, except instead of, you know, a white child, she's brown or she's black or diversity in that way, where it's a book about basketball, but some of the kids are mixed race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. Contemporary stories, absolutely.
We've been handing out some criticism of the marketing departments and the executives. I wonder, is there room to criticize the librarians and the bookstore owners as well?
I mean, we're definitely gatekeepers of a sort. And I know it's something we all struggle with. Being a gatekeeper is, you know, great responsibility, great power and all that. So it is. I mean, I know our collection development, they definitely try to buy as many diverse books for my collection as possible, but they also do for Plaza and Central. Because we know it's important for all kids to see all different kinds of color and creed and sexuality, you know, whatever, diversity in all its forms.
Yeah. I want to ask our two authors to wear both their author hats and parent hats at the same time. And I mean, how would you address this if in that scene we play out of the parent reading the bedtime story to their kid and they sort of stumble into, or maybe they knew it was coming, but that they get to that point where there's something offensive, something that has to be dealt with, something that raises questions that they know their kid is going to have to address at some point, but they're not sure whether this is the time to address it. What do you do when you encounter these images, these mm-hmm. terms?
Well, we still do a lot of course, reading together, and because he's a new reader. And what I find is that usually we'll stop the story and we'll have a discussion. Sometimes I wait till the end. It just depends on kind of the pacing of the book. But I can't shy away from it because, you know, he is a Cherokee Nation citizen, but he's a global citizen as well. And so he has this dual citizenship of being, you know, a U.S. and Cherokee citizen. But he needs to know about everyone. And I can't have him going out into the world thinking that these things are okay or this is normal, because there's kids in his classroom he's sitting next to that are often depicted in these books.
So you don't avoid it, but you do confront it.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, and, you know, again, it's your own comfort level, but I think that we're in an environment now where you have to say something. Children now are global citizens. They can get on the computer at school and Skype with people right. halfway around the world. I mean, there's no ability to say, well, I'm in my little corner of the world and I don't have to worry about that. That's not who we are raising at this point.
How about you, Christine?
I do the same thing. You know what? You can't shelter kids. I remember reading something that was racy and we don't shelter. So my daughter was reading it and I was reading ahead and I got to one chapter and I thought, oh my. Okay.
So this isn't a racial depiction. This is something
this
a little
was something that
sexual.
Was, yes.
Okay.
And I said, okay, you know, let's talk about it, you know, when you get there. And so she waits until we're in the car to say, okay, I got to that chapter and I have a concern and I'm, you know, my heart is just dying. And she says, the character's not going to die, is she? And I said, wait a minute, this is the most hardcore thing you've ever seen. She says, oh no, if you get on the internet, you can find anime in its original version. So we talk about it. And then what I do is I supplement with more positive images.
Well, let's take one more break. When we come back from our last break, we'll shift from hearing about our guests' experience as parents to their experience as authors. How do you create more accurate representations? And where do you start? We'll also hear some positive examples of books that are doing this well today. I'm Brian Ellison. That's all ahead on KCUR's Central Standard. KCUR Central Standard now turns to today's final chapter of our look at race and racism in kids' books. I'm Brian Ellison, and authors Tracy Sorrell and Christine Taylor-Butler are here with me. So is Elena McVicker from the Kansas City Public Library. If you have a book that you think includes racially diverse characters or addresses issues of race in a healthy or positive way, we'd love to hear about that. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. You can also tweet at KCURCST. Christine, is there a conscious effort out there among children's book authors these days to model a healthier approach to
yeah.
race?
You know what? I think that's a positive. But I brought you an example, if you'll indulge me.
Please.
We have a lot of people who are trying to fix a problem they don't understand.
Yeah.
And the whole we need to be diverse has become this big tent. And so people have sent me copies of their manuscripts, and I've seen a trend, and I knew where the trend was coming. And this is from the Children's Writers Reference Book. You know, everybody gets these Bibles to learn how to write.
Mm-hmm.
Describing African-American, Kwanzaa, church-going, extended family, slavery days, choir singing, civil rights era, Southern-style food, basketball, matriarchal families, Islam, Southern Baptist religion. And if you want to include gritty depictions of a real urban environment, try to include peeling paint, storefront, boarded-up window, dumpster, candy store, graffiti, subway, underpass, elevator, laundry room, security card desk, gold teeth, gold wow. jewelry, and a park bench.
And you're reading from a book, a published book, that's how to write children's literature.
The
basically.
Children's Writers Reference Book, authors of 10 Steps to Publishing Children's Books. So you have a lot of people who don't, they're trying to solve a problem. And I go, write what you know. You know, kids are kids. You know, when my kids fall in love, it's because they're kids. It's not because they're black kids. But when you're trying to say, I want to be racially diverse, believe it or not, I grew up in a Georgian colonial house. I still live in a Georgian colonial house. Not mm-hmm. everyone lives on a street with peeling paint. And we see an awful lot of this and not an awful lot of a broader range of the lives of black people.
Tracy, you're working on a new book yourself. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
It's called We Are Grateful, Ojali Haliga, which means we are grateful in Cherokee. And it follows, it's a poetic nonfiction book, and it follows the lives of Cherokee children through the four seasons, both showing that they're grateful for the blessings in their life as well as the challenges. And so for me, I really want to see more contemporary depictions mm-hmm. of Native children and Native communities. And what I find is, you know, like I say, there'll be these pan-Indian things or people will make a shell or a character of a character. And if you look at, you know, I brought some examples today of books that, you know, parents could turn to. There's a brand new board book. In the last couple of years called Little You by Richard Van Camp, who is First Nations out of Canada. It's a wonderful board book. It doesn't specifically talk about the child being tribal, but there's a nice depiction there. And it's nice to have those as well.
Where it's not going out of its way to say, this is what a Native American looks like.
Correct.
But rather,
correct.
They're just there.
Exactly. And because, you know, as Christine said, I mean, we all have families. You know, we're normal people. Eagle Song by Joseph Bruschak is an early chapter book that a young boy lives in Brooklyn, you know, and he's Mohawk. Cynthia Leidick Smith has a number of books that are very contemporary and are wonderful texts. And so,
and I appreciate this list. We're going to try to compile some of these and get this available online at kcur.org later today.
Yeah.
Elena, I know you at the library get questions all the time about what books people should read, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you what are at least a couple examples that come to mind for you as positive portrayals or diverse characters.
The first thing that comes to mind is a book called Mixed Me. And it's by Tay Diggs, and it's illustrated by local illustrator Shane Evans.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually read this at a story time. We do story times once a month at the Nelson Atkins, and I had a parent come up afterwards to me and say, thank you for reading such diverse books. And Mixed Me is about a boy, and his mom is white, and his dad is black, and he's just talking about how, you know, some kids point that out to him, and he's like, I'm just me. And it's a really great book.
Yeah. What's you look like you have another one.
I have a whole list, so you just cut me off when you need to.
Give us one more right now.
A really popular one right now is Last Stop on Market Street, and it just won the Newbery Award. It's a great book. It's by Matt De La Pena, and it's illustrated by Christopher Robinson. And it's about a little boy and his grandma riding the bus through town. And it sounds really simple, but they encounter all kinds of people, and they encounter poverty and homelessness. And, you know, the grandma just very kindly explains everything as kindly as she can. And it's just a beautifully quiet, wonderful book.
That's my favorite book from last year. Very mm-hmm. well done.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure we have lots of other books, and I hope we get to more of them. But I want to get to some of our callers who have thoughts and questions. Let's talk to Christopher in Kansas City. Christopher, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. Good to be on your show here.
Thanks.
A couple things that I had been thinking about while I was listening to some of your other guests today. One, I love the idea of having more diversity. To be American is to be diverse. No matter who you are, your background is varied. I mean, if you look at my history, yes, it's mostly European, but this country is diverse. And so to have that in literature just makes sense to me. That is American, and it just enriches our lives as a whole. And the second thing, I'm not sure if publishers are heading this direction, but we have a rating system on movies to help with parents know what subject matters are going to be in a movie. I thought it might be helpful if you have not necessarily a rating system, but a subject matter system where you say, hey, there's going to be some violence in this book. There's going to be maybe some racism, maybe some sex talked about this. So then you can be prepared and you're not getting in the middle of a book at 9 o'clock at night, and you have to start a two-hour conversation.
It's a great question, Christopher, and I'm going to ask Christine how she feels about that as an author. We have warnings on video games. We have warnings on TV shows and movies. Would you want to see a label on the front of a book?
You know, no. because the question is, it becomes another gatekeeper. You know, I think there should be something. You can read book reviews and they'll tell you, you know, this is what's going on in the book. But I worry we have so many gatekeepers coming into the system now with their own agendas and don't buy this book or I don't like this book. And I see his point of view, but I worry about who becomes that person who decides.
Well, maybe you encourage people instead to go read some of those reviews and get
a
sense
reviews.
Of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tracy, I'm sorry.
Similar, because I think, like I say, there's a lot of good pushback on social media. People are very vocal about pointing out what's problematic in books. I mean, if you look at The Absolute True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie, he won the National Book Award. There's, you know, that's on the banned books list. There's a lot of schools kids can't read that in. Others, it's a, but you know, it's a contemporary depiction, you know, of Native life, not all positive, you know,
right.
very kind of fleshed out in many ways that people don't want to read about or know about, et cetera. But that's what he wrote, you
right.
know.
Right.
And so
Do your research and talk to your librarian, right?
I was going to say, most of the librarians have an idea of what's in the book. And if we don't, we know where to find it. There's a lot of websites that do review books and do warnings. Yeah, so definitely talk to your librarian if you're ever worried about grabbing a book, and we can help you out.
Great. Let's talk to Anna in Prairie Village. Anna, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. So I just had a comment about, it's kind of jumping back to a little bit of what you all were talking about before the break. And I think that you all did a really good job of covering different books that cover different identities with people after the break. But I just kind of wanted to make a comment on the fact that maybe we are looking for Little Home on the Prairie type narratives, but interjecting different identities into those kinds of stories, and just trying to see more diversity in stories that more people, you know, that we all know about. And the thing that I wanted to comment on was that I think while that is interesting and a really good way to get people engaged in different identities in books, I think it's really important also to kind of center different identities, whether that be about disability or race or sexuality, religion, kind of trying to center those identities on their own narratives that apply to those identities, because, you know, they aren't necessarily, it may be hard to try to find, you know, like trying to center a Black identity in a Little Home on the Prairie type, plot line.
Yeah, let me invite Christine Taylor Butler to respond.
I think you probably misunderstood. I think we don't want another Little House on a Prairie. What we are saying is there is this broad sense of culture. So let me say, if I'm an African-American person who grew up in Compton, my experience is going to be completely different than my experience if I grew up in Kansas City. We have a lot of gatekeepers who prefer to put their African-Americans on a little street in Brooklyn. So what we're saying is that was then and those were the classics. It's kind of like defining heroes for children, and they never get to see what it takes to become their own heroes because we are still spoon feeding them our heroes. And what we're saying is those were the classics. It's time for us to create new classics.
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about the gatekeepers, the media moguls or the big publishing houses, I'm sure big bookstores and Amazon too. But how the publishing industry has had a pretty significant change in the last few years with how easy it is for someone to self-publish their own book, at least to get it printed. Now that's a different question than getting it distributed or publicized. But does that change anything? Does the ability of really any of us to get a book printed that we can have copies of and distribute, does that change this picture at all?
I think it will moving forward in some way. We're not there yet, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your child to, and yourself, I mean, to be able to read a wide variety of things, then realistically, it's going to have to be something that they can access through the school library, the public library, in a bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of self-published things you can buy, yes, directly from Amazon, or you can buy it directly from that person, but you are not going to be able to go into the school and the public library. Now, that said, there are some publishers that self-publish things that are through those distribution systems. But that's not where we're at today.
Yeah. Christine Taylor Burton, I didn't give you an opportunity to share a couple of your favorite current books that you think portray race in a positive way.
Okay. Let's start with Jerry Craft.
Fairly quickly.
Okay. Jerry Craft, who does the Mama's Boys series, and Boys is spelt with a Z, also has a book called The Offenders. And it's saving the world, you know, one detention at a time. And he's hilariously funny.
Mm-hmm.
He has a book out at Scholastic, but these books are self-published. And I think there are those people out there who do it right. The production values are good. The books are edited. He's an illustrator. He's a very popular school school visit person. So that's an example. You have Angela Cervantes, who lives here locally, who has Gabby Lost and Found and Allie First at Last. So there are good books coming on the market. The problem is visibility.
Well, it's good to know that even here in the Kansas City area, we have some good things coming out, including from our guests today. Christine Taylor Butler is the author of lots of books, most recently the Lost Tribes series. So, thanks for being here, Christine.
You're welcome.
And Tracy Sorrell, author of the forthcoming We Are Grateful, Ochi Liga Liga. Thank you so much for being here. And finally, Elena McVicker. She's Youth Services Librarian at the KC Public Library, works at the Bluford Branch. Thank you, Elena.
Thank you.
Did you know we have all our shows online, soon to include this one, including a list of some of the books you heard about today? Go to kcur.org/centralstandard. You can check that out later this afternoon. You can keep up with us on Twitter, too. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTSBrian. Matthew Long Middleton will be in this chair next week and beginning tomorrow. He'll look at the meatpacking industry and what can really be done to reform it. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. And our intern is Anna Sterla. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay tuned now for Up to Date.